Ron Van Dam. He's got what the kids call mad skills, which he thought meant he was really good at being angry about everything. Well, live and learn. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hey, what are you doing here?
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
All right. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. My name is in the title of the thing. That's how you know which show you're going to. Some people say, Ron, why didn't you call it the Becky Johnson Show? And I said, well, first of all, my name's not Becky Johnson. And secondly, my name's not Becky Johnson. Somewhere there's a Becky Johnson who just found that joke to be rather distasteful. I apologize to you, Becky, and I'm sorry for stealing the name of the show from your name. Hope that we can get along now. Make yourself comfortable. I will entertain and inform you for the next 30 minutes like an organ grinder's monkey. Do they have those anymore? I don't think they do. There used to be there were guys with big handlebar mustaches and there were cranks on the side of their little cart which made the sound like an organ, and then there'd be a monkey dressed up like a bellhop at a hotel. Dancing around on a chain, and this was entertainment. So comparatively, my show is amazingly wonderful. Unbelievable. That's what I do on this show. I point out things that make no sense and things in the past that we used to do that made no sense. It's so easy to do a show like this because there are billions of examples of that. And in this crazy world now of, I don't know what it is out there, we need to laugh every once in a while. So I do my best to balance this thing. I'm a balancing act is what I am. So last night, I'm in bed, 2 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. And whenever you get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, it cannot be good news. It cannot be good news. It's not like one of your friends are going to call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, how you doing? Just wanted to chat. No, it doesn't work like that unless they're drunk. It doesn't work like that. It's a bad phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning, no matter what. So I answer the phone, of course. And there's this guy on the other end of the phone who says that he's a representative in the House of Representatives, and he's calling from the Capitol at 2 o'clock in the morning in Washington, D.C. And I said, why, do you want to set up an interview for the program? Why are you calling me? He said, Ron, we've heard about you here at the Capitol. We don't love you, but, you know, under the circumstances, well, anyway, he says, Ron, would you consider being Speaker of the House? And I said, who, me? He said, yeah, you. Isn't there anybody else, I said, that can be Speaker of the House in your time of no Speaker of the House crisis? And the guy said, no, there are no other options. The only other option on the list here is some woman named Becky Johnson. I said, that's me as well. So he said, Ron, would you be interested in being Speaker of the House? And I said, I guess so. I've got nothing else to do. And this Republican guy on the other end of the phone says, well, we don't have anything really to do either. A perfect match. But I did say no because I do have a dental appointment on Tuesday, so I can't go to Washington. But thank you for asking. So I hang up the phone. And I'm thinking, wow, this country's in a lot of trouble if they're calling me to be Speaker of the House. Whoa. I mean, I do talk a lot on the show, so I guess the Speaker part I could do. But the House, I don't know. I'd have to see it. I'd have to see the kitchen. So I fall back asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, just an hour later, for those that can't do the math, I get another phone call, and I'm thinking, oh, it's the Capitol again. They just won't give up. This is like harassment. So I pick up the phone and say, what do you want now? And whoa, to my chagrin, it was not the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It was some guy with an accent calling me from the Vatican. I said, my God, I've never gotten a call from the Vatican before. And the guy on the phone said, I know, we have an unlisted number. So I said, are you Ron Van Dam? I said, yes, I am. What's wrong at 3 o'clock in the morning? Does the Pope want to speak to me? And the guy on the phone, no, the Pope wouldn't want to speak to you. That would be a downer for him. But that is why we're calling. Would you consider, if it came down to it someday, would you consider being the next Pope? I said, me? Little Ron? He said, well, no, we've listened to your show, and you are, you know, interestingly annoying. But I think that's the kind of person we need for the next Pope. Would you consider being next in line for the Pope? And I said, well, I'll have to think it over. I do have a dental appointment Tuesday. He said, no, it's not for now. It's like later on, you know, when we do the smoke signal thing. But we won't have to do the smoke signal if you agree already to be the Pope. I said, well, there are some pluses to that. I don't have to lay my clothes out the night before wondering what I'm going to be wearing. I mean, because you wear the same thing all the time. I do get to talk a lot, as I'm doing now on the show. I just do it from a balcony instead of from a studio. So, but no, I appreciate the offer. And the guy from Vatican said, well, we're sorry to hear that. And I said, well, wait a minute, how much does it pay? And the guy hung up on me. So I don't know. Is there anybody who believes all this stuff? It was a bit. I opened the show with that little vignette thing in order to keep you occupied mentally. Now the show shall begin. Becky, you're killing me. I went out last night with a bunch of acquaintances. I was going to say a bunch of friends, but I don't like to label people. They were just a bunch of people that I knew. And we're sitting there, and one of the people says, "Hey, Ron, look at this." And he pulls out his cell phone. Who does that? In the middle of a conversation says, "Hey, Ron, look at this," and pulls out his cell phone. Kids today. And on the cell phone is a picture of a man in England. And he's a judge or a lawyer or something. It's a courtroom thing. And everybody in the courtroom, the judge and the lawyers, are wearing like white wigs. And he says, look at this, Ron. Look at this, Ron. Look at the way that they dress in the courtroom in England. I said, yeah, I know. He says, well, why are you still wearing wigs? I mean, are you seriously? Robes and wigs in a courtroom. Like, what the hell is that, Ron? I said, well, I don't know. I don't know why you're yelling at me. I don't know why. And I Googled it when I got back to my home. And it was what I thought it was. It's a tradition in England to people of high power, of high position, people who are to be respected on the social chain of things in England. They've got social chains there to an extent, you know. If you're the king, like King Charles, you know, which I thought was a breed of dog. I'm confused. But they do have various levels of respect. But one of the highest levels is either being in Parliament, which is the equivalent to our Congress, for those of you that aren't familiar, or in a courtroom. This is where respect is the highest. And those that wear the white powdered wigs are the ones that are of the highest respect. Okay. In this country, that would be the opposite. If you walked up to me wearing a white wig and a robe on top of that, my reaction would not be one of respect. It would be one of hilarity. I don't know how that works. How can that be? I can't imagine being a criminal or doing something wrong in England and being pulled into court and sitting there and seeing all these highfalutin lawyers and judges walking around with wigs and robes and expect me not to sit there and start giggling. I don't think I could help myself, depending on the charge, I suppose. It just shows you how different we all are. We are on a planet of really different people. I mean, really. And that's why we tend to gaggle ourselves. We tend to group with those that are somewhat alike, our alikeness. And that's how you get tribal. But don't say, you know, we shouldn't be tribal. We should all be one people. We're not all one people. We're vehemently different. We've got more in common with an alien coming from another galaxy than we do with some of the people on this planet right now. It's amazingly depressing to think about it, but it's true. You know, all this, like, you know, we're all one people. You know, we all put our pants on the same way. I guess some people don't. Some people put their pants on over their heads, and that makes them different. So forget that thing. We all put our pants on the same way. Come on. It's kind of sad in a way. We are the same, but we're all very different. And I guess we make it that way because we don't all get along. We just don't. Sad. It is sad. That rainbow of love and peace, I think that was just a concept. The actual realization of that concept is probably not possible. I don't know. We all need respect. I've talked about this on the show so many times, I'm getting sick of it. If there was just an ounce of respect in everybody, even if we disagreed vehemently, we'd still have respect. We'd be better off without question. But how do you have respect for people that wear white wigs and robes? It's a tough call. All right, I have an interesting guest coming up momentarily. This guest, by the way, oh my God. He is a commercial photographer. I think he's still doing it. His legacy is incredible. His photographs are crazy. He's going to tell you his website and where to go to look at some of these photographs. They are actual photographs. I mean, they're not photoshopped or anything. And he's done incredible commercial work. I know you've seen this stuff on album covers, that kind of thing. He's photographed the celebrities, some of the most iconic pictures of celebrities you've ever seen. He's done publicity photos for motion pictures, and I know you've seen his work. He's going to join us today, and he's a fascinating man and a really nice guy, too. And he has something in common with me that goes beyond photography. I mean, I do photography, but I'm, you know, nothing like what he does. But what we do have in common is a love for the way things used to be. And I know you're saying, Ron, got to put the past behind you. What you don't understand, millennials, and Generation Z and Generation P. I should be a part of Generation P because that's what I do in the middle of the night. But anyway, you got to understand, man, that things before all this social media, cell phone crap, things were not that. Oh, they were still bad. Oh, we still had wars. Oh, my God, we had wars. Oh, my God, we did. But, I mean, I wasn't around for all of them. But at the same time, life was simpler. My father always said to me, get the hell out of my face. That's what he would say. But he also said some very wise things, and I refer to them every once in a while. And he said, if you ever have a problem, a concern, something that's really bugging you, and you want to come up with a resolve, break it down to its simplest components. I said, why, Dad, that's incredible. Break it down to its simplest components. Get rid of all the drama around it. Get rid of all the branches that have grown off of this tree trunk of hell. Get down to the simple part. And the answer frequently is right there. I said, wow. Then I came up with my own word of wisdom, and I found this to be true, and you're going to disagree with me probably. When in doubt, don't. Ooh, Ron. Ooh, that's nice. Yeah, if you're wondering, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I do this? If you're that much in doubt, don't do it. Because that's the simplest thing to resolve. Well, what if I want to do it? Don't talk back to me. If you're that much in doubt, don't do it. Maybe you can do it later on. No, Ron, it's a once-in-a-lifetime possibility. Break it down to its simplest components, and when in doubt, don't do it. I'm not saying you should follow my advice. I'm just telling you what's worked for me a little bit. Sometimes I've been wrong. That's okay. That's okay. I feel like calling Donald Trump on the phone or texting him, whatever he's into. And saying, Donald, you don't know me. I am Becky Johnson. You don't know me. But Donald, listen to me. Not getting what you want, losing, making a wrong decision, you shouldn't be embarrassed by that. Because that's what makes us human. And that's what makes you not human. Not superhuman, Don. You're not human. Say I'm sorry once in your life, Don. Say it to me. Say it to me. Whisper it into my ear. Tell me what I want to hear, Don. Just say you're sorry. I know you can't do it. Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the guest will be joining us. So don't go anywhere. I think you'll find him fascinating. I know you will. I know you will. Do you ever think of changing your last name?
We don't get to choose our family names. We're born into them, and some of them are, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. For many, a burden that follows them through life. If you've got an embarrassing last name, you may have thought about having it legally changed, but perhaps you've thought it might be complicated and expensive. Well, I'm here to tell you that having your last name legally changed is simple and cost-effective, and we'll take that lifelong burden away in just a few easy steps. Call me today, Attorney Jim Cockwaffle, with the offices of Cockwaffle and Cumstein. We know what you're going through.
Celebrity photographer David Alexander joins us. He's is a commercial photographer. You've probably seen his works, but you didn't even know it. And again, if you're a little bit, older, like I am, you've definitely seen his works. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ron. It's good to be with you.
You have a new, photography, book, an art photography book, which is fascinating because it kind of, it brings to light a concept that I had never heard before, which is time photography, I suppose you would call it. What exactly is that?
Wow, that's really, the book is called Pictures of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And the website that the pic that's the entire book is on is picturesoftime.com.
Mm-hmm.
So the actual subject that I photograph and that I found myself photographing for decades, even while I was doing the commercial work, is time. And it's time as the word time makes sense to me. As we know, you know, physicists are discussed and everybody, you know, time is an abstract concept. But time for me, and the way that I think of it in this book, is it's really the story of how life is put together, how life works. And that's what I photograph. And I think of it as time. I also think of it as a subject that photographers have never taken on before. You don't, you know, you think of it as something, again, physicists or philosophers or poets might, you know, express, but I think it's an area of photography that, you know, that could be explored by others too. I'm absolutely fascinated by it.
Yeah, I mean, in the purest sense, when I look at some of your works, I mean, there used to be a thing called record albums. Some people don't know what that is, but
yeah, right.
you did the covers of many of the iconic ones.
Right.
And when I look at those and see your works from that time period, that brings me back right to time. It's just all of a sudden, zoom, I'm somewhere else. Yeah. And that's the power of this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
Well,
I appreciate that.
I mean, you the album cover, Eagles Hotel California, which is, again, an iconic
right
album, that's you. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's me. And there, you know, there's the cover of that, which is really well known, and the album is what you call it, has an interspread photograph. It opens up, and the picture on the inside has I don't think it was 116 people that we positioned really one at a time.
Wow.
Until we brought the Eagles out and put them in the middle of that photograph. And that was all. I mean, the whole package, the process, working with the Eagles in finding the hotel to photograph for the cover,
mm-hmm,
while finding the place where we shot the interspread, was really a lot of fun.
Wow.
We did that collaboratively, and it was great.
Wow. So the Hotel California itself, the one that we see, was chosen just by you there, kind of.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Right.
And a lot of people, even in L.A. that I've spoken to over the years, don't know, who know, everybody knows the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Yeah.
But they don't
know that was
photographed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's because I shot it from 60 feet above the ground.
Yeah.
On a cherry picker on Sunset Boulevard across the street from the hotel.
Wow.
And when I saw the bell towers,
yeah,
I'd never seen them before, even though I'd been to that hotel many times.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something that revealed itself. Once I got up there,
yeah,
and then the sun was setting, and I was banging away on my camera, making pictures really fast before the sun went down too much.
See, that's the amazing part, and that's what's sad now these days, with the Photoshop and touching everything up, and actually not even having to be at the location to do the location. That's sad. And what you just told me was this is real. This is life captured, not life created, life captured.
Right.
And that's the difference, right? Yeah.
It's one huge difference. One of the great things of back in the day when we shot film, one of the great things for photographers was we had to get it filmed.
Yeah.
If you didn't, if the picture didn't work, if you didn't get it, then you had to redo it or you just failed.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it was so much fun that we had in my studio, making things happen where everything had to happen in the photograph.
Yeah.
And it's not that way. And I stopped doing commercial work before digital came on.
Good.
So my entire experience is with film. And in fact, in the Pictures of Time book, I try to treat, I'm shooting digitally now, but I try to treat the images the same way I would treat film. I never use Photoshop.
Right.
AI is, as you just said, AI is going to basically kill photography as I knew it.
I know.
Commercially, anyway.
I know.
But you know, we got to make the pictures on film, which was so much fun.
Yeah. You also did many iconic posters for movies, I understand.
Yeah, I did. I did a few. The Terminator.
Yeah.
Richard Pryor live on Sunset Strip. Can I tell you a real quick story about that?
Sure.
It was probably the greatest acting performance I ever experienced. When I photographed Richard, I just said to him, I said, only, Richard, you're a giant on Sunset Strip. And then he created, silently, it was a pantomime performance. With each shot, he created a different expression of himself as a giant on Sunset Strip, like holding his fingers to his shoulder like he was going to flick, like there was a little person standing on his shoulder, he was going to flick that person off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, I was speechless, which I rarely was when I shot.
Perfect.
But it was just astounding.
Well, that's what happens when two creative people get together. You get results like that. So that's great. David, the book is Pictures of Time. It's available to everybody. Tell us how we can see it.
You can see it on my website, picturesoftime.com. And there are links on the website to buy the book on Amazon or directly from the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire book, it's good to look at it on an iPad or on a computer screen to really see the photographs. But the entire book is on the website, and the ability to buy it, Christmas gifts or whatever, you know. And I'd love to hear from people too, what their thoughts are, if it sparks ideas, makes other people think of.
Wonderful.
You know, wonder about time.
Excellent. I wish I could talk to you forever, but I'm not supposed to.
I hope you get a chance to meet someday. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll hook up at some point. Picturesoftime.com. Go take a look. It's important, actually, about your history and the history of photographs and. You'll be able to connect. Thank you so much, David. Pleasure. Well, that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for being here. Join me for the next program. Will you do that? Oh, yeah, it's coming up pretty soon. Until that time arrives, I wish you peace.